Good evening, folks, and welcome back on this Saturday, now the third day of April, 2021. I'm your host, Mark Hall. When it comes time to take a look back at the week just past, one thing seems to be increasingly clear. It was arguably anything but holy. And we'll touch on some of that in a minute. But maybe the best way to start off is with a status update on World War III. A couple stories there. Russia has warned, says the Daily Mail in the UK, that it will now take extra measures to ensure its security if NATO tries to send forces to Ukraine, maybe to protect the Biden interests there, after Moscow moved 4,000 troops to the border amid growing fears of war in the disputed Donbass region. Said Kremlin spokesman Dmitry Peskov to reporters, quote, no doubt such a scenario would lead to further increase in tensions close to Russia's borders. Of course, this would call for additional measures from the Russian side to ensure its security. However, he insisted, Russia is not threatening Ukraine, despite an earlier statement which warned that a war in Donbass would destroy its neighbor. From there, the story talks about footage emerging which shows dozens of military helicopters close to the frontier, as well as the movements of tanks and other military vehicles by train. Writes Michael Snyder on Friday about the situation, at this hour, more Russian military forces have been massed near Ukraine's borders than we've ever seen before. And Western military leaders say they're concerned that troop movements that we've witnessed recently may be leading up to an invasion, which would greatly test the resolve of the senile regime in Washington. Where war hawks, who may have been salivating for this all along anyway, would almost certainly not just sit back and let Russia conquer all of Ukraine, and the likely military response could set off a chain reaction that might ultimately spark World War III. And continues Michael Snyder, although you won't read about it in the Western press, it turns out that Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky essentially signed a declaration of war against Russia, thus sparking the latest escalation, back on March 24th. It's known as Decree 117/2021, and basically, as he summarizes it, the decree now makes it the official policy of the government of Ukraine to retake Crimea from Russia, which isn't going to happen without some kickback. From there, let's take a look back more or less chronologically at a week that you just have to say pretty well made it clear that evil is now running rampant in the world. So where do we start? Oh yeah, the Satan shoes are certainly indicative of what's happened to formerly free America. And so is the timing, literally on the first of the biblical feasts. Over last weekend, a so-called artist, and I debated not even giving the name of this particularly disgusting scumbag, came out with a Nike sneaker that was called the Satan Shoes, included a genuine drop of human blood in the insole area. They were released for sale on, what else, Monday. Only 666 pairs, and gee, isn't that an original bit of symbology, all priced at $1,018, sold out shortly after they went on sale, which says more about America than anything you're likely to hear from the masked idiot masquerading as president in Washington. That, however, was followed up by the shoe manufacturer, a company that I have absolutely no respect for anyway, Nike, filing a federal trademark infringement lawsuit on Monday against the company that released the customized, controversial version of their sneakers, MSCHF, in collaboration with that so-called rapper, Lil Nas X. Although the disgusting excuse for an artist wasn't named in the suit. Said the company, the sneakers are modified versions of the Nike Air Max 97, decorated with the blood and the pentagram pendant, after the company figured out that a whole lot of people believed they were somehow involved with the shoes, even though they released a statement over the weekend saying they had nothing to do with them. And maybe, folks, Nike brings this on themselves because just about everything else they do somehow or other seems pretty satanic, so it's not really that much of a leap to suspect they were probably up to their, well, insoles in this one. During a normal week, and we're never going to see one of those again, this next story would be a contender for most obscene thing to start us off with. Now it's just part of the crowd. In the People's Republic of California, particularly Cesspool Central, the San Francisco Bay Area, so-called universal basic income pilot programs are proliferating right along with feces and needles. The alleged goal is to empower poor families with unconditional cash grants. But there's a catch, and if it sounds like something you might have expected to hear in Adolf Hitler's Germany, you're probably not alone. You're not eligible for these, notes the Reason.com summary, if you're white. And notice, folks, that's an even bigger subgroup than Adolf targeted. Last week, Oakland Mayor Libby Schaff announced the launch of the Oakland Resilient Families SICK partnership that will provide 600 families with a $500 a month cash stipend for 18 months. She said, what we're seeing today is not a personal failure, it's a systems failure. And guaranteed income is one of the most promising tools for systems change, racial equity, and economic mobility we've seen in decades.
Morons. I've got morons on my team.
Well, again, they're not on our team. They're really trying to destroy the entire playing field, the game, and the entire stinking country along with it. The communist, I guess we better call it a comradeship rather than a partnership, is being run by a bunch of so-called community groups and public-private partnerships. So really the question is it truly communist or fascist, or have we just reached the point where there's no longer any real difference there? One thing's for sure, folks, it's racist as hell, but if you point that out, they'll probably do to you what Adolf did to the Jews and gypsies, only a few generations back. How many brain cells does it really take to see the pattern repeating here? Reason asks the question, gee, is such outright in-your-face discrimination and exclusion of white people actually legal? They interviewed Walter Olson, legal expert at the Cato Institute, who noted that the U.S. and California constitutions, back when we had them, generally prohibit race-selective programs and public services. Of course, there's a whole lot of stuff that the Constitution prohibits, folks, that they're doing massively, from infringement to we don't need no stinking warrant. But, said Olson, the structure of the program is racially discriminatory. It will probably not make it over the threshold for when government is allowed to discriminate, says Olson, telling Reason that governments can only discriminate along racial lines when implementing programs narrowly aimed at righting past discriminatory behavior by that same government. And this is almost funny if you think about it. The legal issues surrounding Oakland's so-called basic income pilot are harder to parse, said Olson, given that it's allegedly at least privately funded and administered, but also heavily promoted by city officials. Now, wait a minute, folks. If this was a private group, say the KKK, that was this blatantly discriminating against, well, any other non-politically correct racial group, you know darn well that government would be in there with goons knocking down doors and shooting their dogs, and probably forcing them to bake a cake or two as well. Arguably the most important news over the weekend, not directly related to the Fourth Reich and the religion that underlies it, came from north of the Arctic Circle, where the Defense Ministry of Russia published a video on Friday touting what they called the first ever maneuver of its type to have taken place in the history of naval warfare, when no less than three nuclear-powered submarines of the Russian Navy punched through the Arctic ice simultaneously, and demonstrated that if they felt like it, they could launch nuclear missiles at, say, a senile regime in Washington. The exercise showed the three nuclear submarines busting through an area of ice approximately a meter and a half thick, all within a radius of 300 meters, and the video showed at least one of them having its missile silo open. Russian Navy Commander-in-Chief Admiral Nikolai Evmanov was cited in state sources as reporting the following to President Vladimir Putin of the amazing feat, quote, for the first time in the history of the Navy, three nuclear-powered missile carriers have surfaced from under the ice. Reported the Hal Turner Radio Show website, the location near Franz Josef Land where the nuclear sub surfaced is not routinely monitored by American defense satellites for missile launches, meaning they may not even be detected for quite some time, which turns out not to be that long really anyway. But over the pole, the missile flight time to, say, New York City is approximately 15 minutes. And unless you're outright senile or work for CNN, it's pretty tough to conclude this was anything other than a dramatic warning. On the other end of the military competence scale, though, we have this. Via Southfront.org and Zero Hedge, in what's being called an unusual turn of events, well, not that unusual anymore, maybe, militants, once backed by the United States, have now seized a shipment of U.S.-made missiles that were heading to fighters currently backed by the United States. Huh? Says the piece, the U.S.-made TOW missiles were seized March 28th by the Syrian Task Force, a joint force of the Turkish Police, Counterterrorism Unit, SIC, and National Syrian Army, or SNA, near the Turkish-occupied town of Azaz in the northern Aleppo countryside. And besides the two TOW anti-tank guided missiles, the weapon shipment included 24 AK-type assault rifles, and that means real assault weapons of the type that formerly free Americans are no longer allowed to even think about owning, a designated marksman rifle, two gun tubes, and a whole bunch of ammunition. Now, again, I do have to pause here. These are the people that under the new regime want to make sure you are good and disarmed. They want to make sure that what now amounts to defense, though, consists of flight suits and body armor now modified for pregnant women and well-neutered transgenders that aren't exactly sure what they are or maybe even which end of the rifle the bullet comes out. No wonder they're planning on having foreign troops do their dirty work on U.S. soil. And I do think the summary paragraph here of this piece is kind of interesting, although I'm going to have to bleep it a bit. The U.S. plans to arm Syrian rebels have inflamed the war there, threatened neighboring countries, and even ended up turning Washington's tools against each other. And some, notes Zero Hedge, of the not very tolerant socialist media users might call all of these great achievements in government a brilliant example of what was once called a cluster f***. Does anybody really still believe that senility isn't contagious? From Dan Lyman at NewsWars.com in the South Texas border area, illegal aliens are now receiving envelopes full of cash. Most of them seem to have about $2,500 or so before they board commercial flights bound for other U.S. destinations from South Texas, say multiple reports and multiple journalists who shared accounts from McMillan Miller International Airport in Hidalgo County, Texas, which indicate that many of the illegal aliens now flooding in response to the Biden-Fuhrer welcome mat across the southern border are likely being helped to fly ever deeper into the U.S., perhaps without even need to show identification, much less a COVID travel pass. Among those, Jen Pellegrino for OAN wrote that about 40% of the airport traffic on Saturday morning out of Texas McMillan International appeared to be migrants headed to destinations within the U.S. Furthermore, they carried boarding passes and paperwork indicating they did not speak English. And James Klug reported other flights, about 80% or so filled with illegal immigrants. One woman told my Spanish-speaking source she was not given a court date, but was given this nice folder with a big banner that says, "Please help me, do not speak English." English, and the same $2,500 in it. Hey folks, how much funny money did Big Brother give you? Oh, and meanwhile, there was this report as well. Two tickets for a one-hour flight cost nearly $2,000 for actual Americans, because despite airline seat maps showing over 10 open seats on the plane, all of them appeared to have been blocked for migrants. So they had to be booked one at a time, because otherwise the computer said the flight was full. Related piece, courtesy of Natural News, Zero Hedge, and the Epoch Times, although this one comes from Gila Bend, Arizona, near the Mexican border, where about 50% of the incoming illegals, those that are being tested at all, are testing positive for the booga booga flu. Hey, here's a great question that just seems to wrap a number of stories together this morning, folks. I wonder if they can prove that they're COVID positive, but obviously are non-white, do they get more money in their envelopes? In a statement, Arizona Attorney General Mark Brnovich said, quote, "Blindly releasing thousands of people, including convicted criminals and those who may be spreading the COVID-19 into our state, is both unconscionable and a violation of federal law." Quick aside here, folks, since when has that even slowed him down of late? "This must be stopped now," he said, "to avoid a dangerous humanitarian crisis for the immigrants and the people of Arizona." Well, A, it's too late, and B, that's why they're shipping them all over the friggin' country, folks. All of which prompts Mike Adams to ask, has anyone else noticed that there's been no lifting of the restrictions in the various communist red, but they call them blue states, even though the mass Zyklon B vaccination program is well underway? Maybe, he suggests, that's because they want to continue the complete destruction of the national economy and in the process control the populace and keep everyone weak and broke. Lest you think, however, that it's just the Biden regime that is completely senile and outright insane, this comes from across the pond via Paul Joseph Watson, who tells us that, oh no, the British government is perhaps even worse, where a government minister appeared on Monday morning TV there urging Brits to call out anybody else they might see engaging in any what he called odd behavior, things like hugging their loved ones. And no doubt George Orwell is somewhere thinking, hey, I missed that one. Nigel Huddleston, the UK's minister, are you sitting down, for tourism and sport. What a bunch of stinking morons, made these remarks during an interview spot on BBC Breakfast. Quote, "Despite the temptation, please don't risk the health of your loved ones by actually hugging them," said Huddleston, before going on to suggest that people should intervene if they witness such dreadful behavior. Not to be outdone at all by the nutcase Brits, though, the Biden-Fuhrer regime, says another piece courtesy of Natural News and J.D. Hayes, are settling into their roles as the modern SS, evidenced by the fact that they're planning to use all Big Brother's levers of government to quash any remaining political opposition, even if that means neutering some of the probably 80 million Americans, but who's going to count them, that didn't choose tyranny back in November. Politico reported last week, says the piece, that the Department of Achtung, and it means more now than ever, Homeland Security, is looking at monitoring the travel of what they call domestic extremists. Guess which color they probably are. And also unconstitutionally restricting travel for all said individuals by adding them to the FBI's no-fly list, Achtung, that up to now had been reserved solely for foreign terror suspects. But of course, foreign terror suspects get free flight tickets, no ID, and an envelope full of cash. Law enforcement sources told the outlet that the additional monitoring would be part of the Biden regime and its mounting war on conservatives, patriots, and of course pro-Trump voters by treating them as national security threats rather than fellow comrades. Politico reported this is also part of, quote, broader conversations in government about how to use tools developed for the global war on terror to combat domestic extremism. And they noted, probably prophetically, if passed as prologue, the approach could prove politically contentious. Not that the slaves will be able to do anything about it. And if civil war is the goal, and let's not kid ourselves, then it all certainly does fit into the plan. From there, let's move on to some other stories from about midweek with a bit of point-counterpoint, or truth and the absolute lies, that demonstrate just how far gone so much already is. Here's one from Zero Hedge and Tyler Durden about Pfizer. They want to be your poke. They're already testing their vaccine on children as young as 5, but not to worry. With a nod of the head to Dr. Mengele, they're soon going to be testing it on children as young as 6 months, because long-term testing requires younger and younger guinea pigs. Who would allow their children to be subjected to this? But anyway, the first results of the company's trial on an older cohort of minors has just arrived, and surprise, 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 they show exactly what you knew they would. The vaccines are 100% effective, and here, folks, as an engineer, I might have thought that would be a virtually impossible statement to make, well, truthfully anyway, especially with a small and finite number of tests, at protecting children from something that really wasn't going to do them any harm anyway. But yeah, here's the claim. At protecting children from COVID-1984. To be sure, children are already pretty much resistant to it, writes Zero Hedge, because their observed survival rate, if they get the booga-booga flu at all, is pretty much 100%. And that's based on a far greater sample size than this so-called test. Even though there are allegedly cases of fatalities attributed to the booga-booga flu, admits Tyler Durden, just like there have been people that have died in motorcycle crashes attributed to the booga-booga flu as well. And here I have to put this in. While I haven't seen the statistics, and we know we're not likely to, I have a strong suspicion more people died from self-inflicted gunshot wounds, car wrecks, and motorcycle crashes, not to mention alcohol overdoses, attributed, truthfully or not, to you-know-what, than all of the children that ever died from COVID-19. The trial, it says, involved 2,260 participants in the United States, among which there were 18 confirmed COVID-19 infections. Can you smell just a bit of obfuscation in that term? Observed in the placebo group, and none in the group that received the poke. And I gotta ask, which proves what? Side effects, says the story, were generally consistent in what was seen in adults. They didn't tell us how many, in other words, got really, really sick, had major medical problems, or will, perhaps worse than any symptoms shown by that 18 that tested positive. See what I mean? Side effects, it's claimed here, were generally consistent with that observed in adults. Which right there sounds like a pretty good reason to avoid the poke, but doesn't tell us much more than that. Here's the kicker. The company claimed the vaccine elicited a robust antibody response in children. Which means exactly what, really? Because we know, folks, that if they'd been exposed to the dreaded disease, even if they hadn't actually shown any symptoms, they still would have shown antibodies, and probably would thereafter be immune at least to the variant that they were exposed to, if not a broader range than this vaccine is probably going to provide. So why not just expose the kids to the real thing, rather than the danger of an untested poke? Does it mean they'll be protected against variants? No. Does it mean they'll actually be protected against the COVID bug? Not really, because they can still catch it, they can still pass it on. And what has it done to the child's immune system in the process? Well, they didn't test for that at all. So what do the antibodies mean? Well, they've produced something that modified your system to produce spike proteins. All I can say is BFD. And that, folks, is at best, because any trade-offs won't be obvious for a while yet. Which brings us now to the counterpoint, the kind of story you won't hear from the people pushing mask mandates, lockdowns, and socialist distancing, or the Waystream Ministry of Truth, but maybe I repeat myself. But you will hear it from Natural News and places that actually report on, yeah, science. This is a board-certified pathologist speaking out about the underlying cause of COVID hospitalizations and deaths. By the way, he's not alone. There are any number of honest witnesses to this one. Dr. Ryan Cole is the founder of Cole Diagnostics, one of the largest independent labs in Idaho, and has studied, as have many others that we've reported on, the real reasons why people suffer from infections, including things like COVID-19, 84. And the real public issue, he says, is vitamin D deficiency, which plagues about 70% of the world's population. Normal D levels, he said, decrease your COVID symptom severity risk for hospitalization by 90%. And there have been a number of placebo-controlled trials that show this all around the world. This is not just a correlation. It's a scientific fact, said Dr. Cole. Data shows what kills people. It's the cytokine storm. If you're in the mid-level of vitamin D range, you will not die from COVID because you cannot get a cytokine storm. And here's something that's politically incorrect. This is not the reason they don't tell you. I think it's because they want people to die. And yeah, that's just my personal opinion based on an entire year of observation. But there really is a racial element involved as well, because people with darker skin tend to have a greater chance of being vitamin D deficient due to how the sun's rays are absorbed by the skin and produce vitamin D. Vitamin D deficiency, says the piece, affects about 47% of Caucasians with lighter skin, 70% of Latinos, 72% of Native Americans, and 83% of African Americans, because darker skin does not assimilate vitamin D as efficiently. And this is a biological, not a racial issue, kind of like other things that are politically incorrect to talk about, like whether you can reproduce sexually or not, even though the same idiots prattle about science. And think about these next pieces of information in the context of things that are being done to propagate, not prevent the propagation, of the disease. Vitamin D deficiency is prevalent in people who are obese, which is one of the other severe risk categories for COVID illness. Because vitamin D is a fat-soluble vitamin, it is readily stored in fat cells, and it's circulating vitamin D levels that are higher in people who have a healthy weight. Vitamin D levels are also lower for elderly people, especially those who live a sedentary life or those who are confined to a dark nursing home environment. Said Dr. Cole, 90% of deaths in the state have been over 70 years of age, and that's the at-risk population. We've stopped our society for something that's taking people that are already at that death risk age range anyway. 96% of people in the ICU are vitamin D deficient. Do you want to know why? Suggests the piece that Florida, despite its higher density and aging population, continues to handle COVID-19 more effectively than all the other locked down northern states. Yeah, they don't subject people to mask mandates and other idiocy, but also they're able to go outside. And the warm temperatures give people an opportunity to have more sun and also a stronger immune system naturally. The spread of viruses is of little concern if healthy people are overcoming the infection more rapidly because their immune systems are equipped with higher vitamin D levels. So here's the bottom line, folks, and this is the part that really ought to infuriate those who understand genuine science and data that supports exactly what pieces like this are talking about. You can't vaccinate your way out of a vitamin D deficiency, and if the deficiency was in fact being adequately addressed, there wouldn't be any need for all of the crap that they're pushing instead, from vaccine mandates and passports to masks. And, of course, complete totalitarian control of everything you think, speak, and do from now until forever. Notice that anything that's helpful to the body is being suppressed and censored in order to coerce submission to a false savior, the vaccines, that carry their own, and some would say extreme, set of risks. Notice that there's no vitamin D mandate, no vitamin D passport system, and certainly no distribution of free vitamin D across the country. Even though clinical and hospital settings that are willing to tell people the truth are having tremendous success treating deficiencies and helping patients recover from infection. And I emphasize this again, and I can't say it any too strongly. If this really was about health and helping people recover and not fall victim to the bioweapons that are being deployed, you'd be hearing a lot more about vitamin D and a whole hell of a lot less about totalitarian mandates. Which takes us to the break, and we'll be right back. Welcome back now to the second segment for this evening. This is your host, Mark Hall, and we talked about some of the things that happened earlier on in the week in the first one. I'll introduce this one by saying I'm not a fan of April Fool's Day, but it happened this week. I mused on that day that wouldn't it be great if the puppet masters in Washington would actually come out and say, hey, we've decided to admit that Biden is senile and we're going to remove him using the 25th Amendment. And even if that was nothing but an April Fool's joke, it would be less cruel than the one they're actually playing on the nation, day after day. On Friday, the National Post reported about how China has boasted that they have control over various Western think tanks, so-called election integrity groups, and the Biden regime's national security team. And that, too, was no April Fool's joke. And so from there, sadly, most of the rest of the news sounds like it should be an April Fool's joke, but really isn't. Case in point, and where else, the People's Republic of California, and in this case, Insanity Grand Zero, the Los Angeles County District Attorney's Office. Is this guy another Soros appointee, or does he just look like one? George Gascon announced that his office is planning to, quote, severely downsize or outright dissolve the office's hardcore gang and major narcotics units as early as next month, according to Fox 11 LA, citing multiple sources within the district attorney's office, who, of course, spoke on condition of anonymity from the cuckoo's nest. My understanding, said another anonymous source, is that there's going to be a dissolution of the unit either on April 1 or 2. Oh, I think it really ought to be today. And this one was a prosecutor who said they feel like they've been hamstrung by Gascon's decision to ban them from using gang and gun enhancements, huh? And they feel that disbanding the unit will be a disaster waiting to happen, given the violent crime surge across the area. Said another prosecutor to Fox 11, we can already hear in jail cells and interviews with officers on the street telling us that gang members are laughing at them. I mean, it's undermined the credibility of law enforcement in its entirety. Unquote. And hey, was there any still left at this point anyway? Said Fox LA's Bill McGoolan, the hardcore gangs unit is responsible for prosecuting, quote, the most heinous and complex gang-related crimes in the county. It's currently juggling 700 active cases. And what's more, quote, the LA DA office, major narcotics unit, had a meeting with upper management at 3 p.m., and they were informed that their unit, too, will be cut by as much as half. Meanwhile, true to form, Black Lives Matter is cheering the rumor. No doubt they're looking forward to more free Nikes and big-screen TVs real soon. A BLM activist called Akili said he is simply doing what the people have been asking for, and that clearly means the Soros people. That's why he was elected. Hardcore gang unit prosecutors disagree, and they say that dissolving the unit will hurt marginalized communities the most. Said one of them that especially when it comes to gang murder, the fallacy is that all of the victims are rival gang members, and that's simply not true. Given that it's April Fool's Day, folks, and this unfortunately is another example of what's not, I do want to ask this question. Are they also going to dissolve the utterly unconstitutional gun control and victim disarmament units? Of course not. They're just going to reimagine them to disarm EBCs, and that now stands for everybody but criminals. Let's call this a related story, since we're certainly talking gun-free, but definitely not gang-free, California. Four people were killed, including a child, in a shooting spree at a Southern California office building. Don't they know that California is gun-free, darn it? Why, don't they know that the number one gun banner in the United States is the dictator-in-waiting Kamala Harris, a Soros appointee, and former San Francisco DA and later attorney general for the entire communist state? Why, it's a gun ban mecca, and these kind of things simply cannot be allowed to happen, where the leftists have done exactly what they tell us is so good for you, whether you like it or not. Why, this is shocking, I tell you. Unbelievable. The next thing you know, Dr. Mengele will be telling people that people could take the poke and still catch the booga booga flu. Say it isn't so. Even on April Fool's Day. Crisis in Paradise is what I'm going to call a related story. The Mexican tourist mecca of Tulum is descending into chaos as various cartels are waging a turf war during spring break. Tulum is about a 73-mile drive south of Cancun, and these days it's flooded with spring breakers, millennials, and anyone trying to escape the plandemic in the United States and Europe. Tulum is a coastal town known for its beautiful beaches and party vibe, but it's gaining a reputation for crime and violence, right in the heart of completely gun-controlled and demonstrating what that means, Mexico. Homicides in Tulum jumped 109% in 2018, then by almost half again in 2019, and the upward trend continued last year with homicides up 44%. And that, folks, was in spite of the collapse in the tourist trade due to the pandemic. And this year, homicides and other violent crimes are expected to hit record highs in gun-free Tulum. Tulum, though, is undergoing a dangerous turf war among the drug cartels who don't seem to obey the gun control laws. No less than six different cartels operate in the resort town, including the powerful Jalisco New Generation Cartel, the Zetas Vieja Escuela, the old-school Zetas, and the Sinaloa Cartel. And the main reason these cartels operate in this area is because the tourists want their party drugs. For a town of about 80,000 residents, there are only 150 police officers, says James Tobin, Quintana Roo-based citizens' representative on the federal government's National Security Council, to the local newspaper called Reforma. And this week, a cartel shootout occurred in downtown Tulum, where a Spanish tourist was seriously injured, according to El Sol de Puebla. In the last 24 hours, three cartel shootings have occurred in the gun-free town's city limits, killing two and wounding eight. Tourist and Baltimore native Alistair Williamson tweeted some photos from the carnage, saying, "Nothing like a good old Mexican shootout next to where we were dining in Tulum. Chaos." And Twitter user Joey Sutera responded to the chaos unfolding there by saying, quote, "To all my friends heading to Tulum this month for Zamna and beyond, there's a real problem in this moment that the media are not covering." Hey, imagine that, folks. The cartels are fighting for turf and control, even at venues on the beach road, and people are getting shot almost daily. Well, that's what you get in a gun-free killing zone, I guess. Anyway, as of now, he says most of them are gang shootings, but there's always a risk of getting in the middle of a crossfire. Tulum is beautiful, and hopefully it will pass. Just exercise more than usual caution," unquote. But it's not just the drug cartels that are dangerous, writes Tyler Durden for Zero Hedge. So are the police. Who could have thought it, folks? While drug cartels wage war, demonstrators have flooded the streets all week in protest against police corruption. They began when a woman in Tulum was killed, George Floyd style, last weekend. I don't think in this case that means she was full of fentanyl. The video is graphic, but it's ignited small pockets of social unrest, says the piece, among residents who are absolutely fed up with the cartels, the police, and the corrupt government. But maybe they repeat themselves. And the article concludes with a set of warnings, which don't go quite as far as your host will. While cartel wars and protests might put a strain on police and local officials who need to keep their beach town in pristine condition to sucker Americans into paradise to blow their stimulus checks, protesters are now carrying signs that say things like, "Tourist, you are not safe in Tulum," in part because you're not safe from, quote, corrupt police officers. One of them said something that, honestly, folks, we've seen for years in the corrupt, disarmed, narco police state of Mexico. An American tourist, roughed up by the corrupt police, wrote, "I was absolutely scared when a Tulum police officer pulled me over. I was threatened with 36 hours in jail, but there was no way I was speeding because other cars were going faster than me. Maybe it was the fact I was in a rental car that flagged the officer that I was a tourist. As I grabbed my license from my purse, the officer noticed I only had American dollars and demanded money. If I didn't pay the fine, he threatened me with jail," said an American female tourist, Melinda Lewis. Well, folks, those who've traveled south of the border, back when we had a border anyway, know that this has been referred to colloquially for years as La Mordida, or the bite. Now, of course, much of the southern United States north of that non-existent border is also being bitten. In what's beautiful Tulum, however, it's gotten so bad that even some Airbnb operators are warning people about the cartel wars. But just stay away from trying to buy drugs. You'll probably be okay. Concludes Zero Hedge, with Instagram influencers flocking to the tiny beach town, there's a dark secret they won't share with you on their feed, and that is, Tulum is a chaotic hellhole full of corrupt cops and daily shootings as the cartels wage war against each other. Unquote. And all I can add to that, folks, is, and guess what? The Biden regime wants to bring that first to California, and they got a pretty good start there, and then to all of the rest of America with a K. Here next, another really bad joke that for the most part I've avoided talking about until the appropriate day, April Fools. And hey, while we're at it, let's print another few $1 trillion and say it's for your own good. The Biden Fuhrer has now announced his, or at least his communist Chinese puppet master's, next great leap forward. Well, that's not what they call it here, but that's what the puppet masters called it when Mao did it. 2 or 2 and a quarter or maybe 3, but who knows, $1 trillion of new money printing and so-called infrastructure improvements. Yeah, we need to be able to control everywhere you go, and more particularly where you're not going to be allowed to go and what you're not going to be allowed to buy. Party chairman unveils multi-$1 trillion infrastructure sick ut taxation plan, or something to that ilk, say many of the headlines. After some remarks about how you should be afraid, be very afraid of the booga-booga flu, and telling the few idiots again that were tuned in live to his speech that he keeps a big piece of paper in his pocket because he can't remember all the zeros on the number that have to do with how many have died, he focused on the provisions of his 2 and a quarter, or is it more, $1 trillion so-called American Jobs Plan, and how the regime plans to pay for building bridges, ooch roads, expanding access to high-speed internet, whether you want to be poisoned with 5G or not, improving public transit, for those that take the poke at least, and encouraging adoption, whether you like it or not, again, of electric vehicles, because you won't be able to use your old ones anymore, and if you don't have the right permission, you won't be able to use anything. Biden says leading economists are now predicting the U.S. economy will grow at 6.5% this year. And if they won't make that prediction, guess what job they don't get? As it bounces back. But still, there is more to be done. I'm convinced, said the Fuhrer in his speech, that in 50 years, those who survive what's coming anyway, people will look back and say, this was the moment that America won the future. Unquote. You know what, folks? I got to admit it. I really hate reading this crap. As I've indicated, I would have felt the same way about Mao Zedong's Great Leap Forward or Stalin's 5-year plans. But maybe in hindsight, they were more credible because we didn't have the evidence of history to say, come on, who still believes this crap at this point? Command economies fail, and the U.S. dollar is a dead man walking, and we've known it for years. But now the only people who still believe it work for the Ministry of Truth. Or they're taking their poke and suffering from mask hypoxia, or more likely both. And if you still can't wrap your head around the fact that it's communist command and control type economy to the core, take a look at the terminology that they openly use. Ordo ab chao, order out of chaos. Well, at least that's the Illuminati CFR et al. Form of the same equation. Now they call it build back better. Yeah, doesn't that sound especially Soviet? Of course, you have to destroy it first, and they pretty well accomplished that in order to do the Great Reset and then build back better. The plan includes all the usual platitudes. They just don't tell you the details or exactly what the side effects will be. And it includes modernizing 20,000 miles of highways, roads, and streets that are in, quote, difficult shape right now, unquote. How else are you going to be able to tax people by the mile? Expanding access to high-speed internet in rural areas. Ramping up IRS enforcement of corporations, which he claims could raise hundreds of billions of dollars from those companies that don't flee the formerly free United States before that. And establishing a minimum tax rate of 21% on corporations' global earnings. But hey, folks, we certainly know that if you have the right connections with the big guy, wink, wink, nudge, nudge, there's probably a way around that. He claims that his favorite economists on Wall Street estimate his plan could create 18 million jobs. They don't tell you how many tens of millions are going to be destroyed, of course. And they want to push the creation of 500,000 electric charging stations. But they don't tell you how, if there's no electricity, there won't be any charging there either. Because you know what, folks? Somehow I don't think most of these idiots have figured out that there's a connection between making electricity and carbon. As for how do you pay for all of this, Biden came out with some more truly idiotic statements. He said, quote, no one can be upset about a corporate tax increase to 28%. No one, at least, are going to allow to actually speak about it. He added that he'd be, quote, open to new ideas as long as they come from his puppeteers. And he said that in just a few weeks, his regime would release the second half of the Great Leap Forward, the American Family Plan, the sister proposal to the American Jobs Plan, introduced this week. Official House organ Bloomberg offers some more key takeaways from the new Soviet plan. Biden emphasized, they say, that his plan includes the creation of union jobs, although eventually I'm sure they'll change the name to party jobs, because can't we see where this is headed? He also made it clear, they said, he wanted the plan to be bipartisan. He was willing to work across the aisle with other communists, like Minority Leader Mitch McConnell. And gee, isn't that amazing? And besides, if they don't toe the line, guess who runs the voting machines? He also promised anyone making less than $400,000 a year, that's current dollars, of course, not to be confused with the millions of dollars that it'll take to have the same kind of lifestyle just a year or so from now, but they won't see their taxes go up. Yeah, folks, they won't see it, but it's coming. And more than anything else, he said, the plan was important for the country, and I hope you're sitting down for this one. Remember, folks, it is April Fool's Day, to maintain its competitive edge internationally, especially against, yeah, China. And although he's now pretty much suffering the same fate as the alternative media outlets that President Trump allowed to be suppressed, even while he was still in the Oval Office, President Trump issued a statement on Thursday where he called the Biden Great Leap Forward a, quote, globalist betrayal, as well as a, quote, cruel and heartless attack on the American dream, which at least is true. He also labeled the hike a, quote, massive giveaway to China and many other countries that will send thousands of factories, millions of jobs, and trillions of dollars to these competitive nations, saying Biden's ludicrous multi-trillion dollar tax hike is a strategy for total economic surrender. Sacrificing good-paying American jobs is the last thing our citizens need as our country recovers, sick, from the effects of the global plandemic. And he didn't spell that right either. The tax hike, though, is a classic globalist betrayal by Joe Biden, said the president, and his friends. The globalists will win, special interests will win, China will win, and that goes without saying. The Washington politicians and government bureaucrats will win, but hard-working American families will lose. And that's been obvious for at least several months now. The Zero Hedge summary also notes that Trump took part in an interview on Wednesday with his daughter-in-law, Laura Trump, which was swiftly erased, like just about everybody else is now being, from two Facebook and other socialist media sites. Laura complained about having the content removed from her Facebook page, saying the Trumps were stunned by the blatant censorship and that, quote, we are one step closer to Orwell's 1984, she wrote, prompting at least one pundit to say what those who've already also been banned probably couldn't, which is to, I gotta bleep this. Shut the f*** up, Laura and Eric. Now you're stunned? Why didn't you and the president actually do something while it would have made a difference? If you didn't care when those who supported you were being censored or having their votes destroyed, why do you think 80 or so million Americans care about your censorship now? And by the way, so there's at least one bit of coverage here. After the podcast interview called The Right View with Laura Trump was yanked from two Facebook on Tuesday night, and she tweeted about it on Instagram, the links seem to have been removed from there as well. So on into other so-called economic news. Here's one from Zero Hedge. Despite tumbling hard economic data, you could call that real economic data, the U.S. manufacturing survey at least continues to suggest everything is awesome. As a matter of fact, as awesome as it's ever been. Markets, U.S. manufacturing PMI, printed at 59.1 in the final March data, which met expectations after dipping to 58.6 in February, and the ISM manufacturing estimate crushed expectations with a 64.7%, higher even than the highest forecast, says Bloomberg. And this is in spite, note the cynics at Zero Hedge, of the supply chain disruptions, which dominated the narratives from the survey respondents as manufacturers have signaled the greatest deterioration in vendor performance since data collection began in May of 2007. They note that shortages of semiconductors in particular have been disruptive to the auto industry, where production in recent months has been restrained due to lack of supply. And with that, a quick diversion to a related story about how Ford is warning of continued production halts through mid-April as the chip shortage worsens. They're suspending more production and eliminating work shifts temporarily. Ford's not the only North American automobile manufacturer experiencing production woes. Stellantis NV, the maker of Ram, Jeep, and Chrysler, said last week that production halts at some of their plants will continue through mid-April due to a lack of chips. Both Honda and Toyota have also idled their plants in March due to shortages, and GM expects that lost production could crush their pre-tax profits by $2 billion this year. Mitsubishi UFJ Morgan Stanley Securities says the piece estimates that the shortages will reduce global vehicle production by 1.5 million units this year, but that hasn't stopped the shares of some car makers from being more than doubled in the last year due to, hopes for recovery and, of course, the mandate for electric vehicles real soon now. Curmudgeons that they are, the Zero Head summary about the manufacturing hopium includes some poignant comments from various manufacturers. The machinery subgroup, for example, said they have, quote, widespread supply chain issues. Suppliers are struggling to manage demand and capacity in the face of chronic logistics and labor issues. No end in sight. Chief Business Economist at IHS Market, Chris Williamson, said March saw manufacturers struggling to cope with surging inflows of new orders. And although output continued to rise at a solid pace, capacity is being severely strained by the combination of soaring demand and supply chain disruptions. Things that are going on are unprecedented in their survey's 14-year history, meaning inventories of finished goods are falling at a steep rate. And as a result, he said, pricing power has risen accordingly as demand outstrips supply. Raw materials prices are increasing at the sharpest rate for more than a decade, and factory gate selling prices have risen to a degree not seen since at least 2007. Furthermore, the fastest increases for rates of both new orders and prices was reported among producers of consumer goods, as the arrival of, say it with me folks, stimulus checks in the post added fuel to a market upswing in demand as the economy continued to pull out of the malaise allegedly caused by the pandemic. No, actually it was Big Brother's pre-planned response to it. And with all this optimism, it says, the big question remaining is whether or not rising price pressures will also become more entrenched. Now, here your host notes something that I've been talking about for a while that more and more people seem to be tuning into. These checks need to be spent real quickly before the price pressures already in place drive prices up to the point where the stimmy checks aren't worth anything. So, kind of like what we've seen when other inflationary economies begin the great leap forward, spend it before it burns a hole in your pocket, because it's going to be worth less tomorrow. And besides which, you may not be able to buy what you need by then anyway, especially if it's something like food, lumber, or repair parts. But not to worry, says Tyler Durden. The Fed says everything is wonderful. They've got it all under control. Any inflationary impulse is transitory, just like we've seen in the past. You know, the kind of thing that led to the infamous Volcker Fed having to raise rates to double digits. The Powell Fed, though, they say, is eager to brush away any analogs to previous episodes of runaway inflation, which they see as having a demand component, and they merely ascribe what is taking place to unprecedented supply chain disruptions, i.e. a collapse in supply, as a result of both the trade war with China and, more recently, the booga 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 flu, which have unleashed chaos among traditional supply chain intermediaries.
These aren't the droids you're looking for.
And while I often disagree with Michael Every of Rabobank, he's hardly an Austrian economist, he does write something today that's worth taking a look at. Is $2.25 trillion even really that much money anymore? Yes, he says the Biden infrastructure plan has been rolled out, and it seems that the WAPO was kept in darkness by its source. The total was only $2.25 trillion. Well, he says, is that even much money anymore? I ask this in all seriousness, seeing these sums that are now being thrown around us daily. The plan speaks about the lines associated with infrastructure, yet U.S. politicians are already repeating their own ones. None shall pass. From Republicans over that corporate tax hike, up from 21% to 28%, and from double or quits from progressive Democrats, who may have been the ones leaking to the WAPO about the $4 trillion U.S. dollar figure. And markets also use their own lines on screens to try to guess where the largesse of Big Brother might flow. Would it be cement, steel, paint, solar panels, electric batteries, and so on? U.S. 10-year yields, he says, are at 1.75%, as he wrote it, while the DXY was down slightly on the day, and the market peruses what this all means. It still isn't quite sure. But I've long flagged, he said, that we'd end up moving to a world where markets would have to listen to politicians, not even central banksters, to know where the goodies will flow in the economy. Hey, folks, remember when we actually had a free economy and it was neither lying central bankers nor lying politicians that were supposed to make that decision? It was actually supply and demand? Well, there it is. That's the big deal. Says Michael Every, it's in the packaging of the why it's needed, which I think represents where far more money will ultimately have to flow. See what I mean, folks? He's missing the big point. We no longer have a free economy, and those of us who can pay attention to history, much less scripture, recognize where this inevitably leads. It isn't pretty, but those who have at least some indication of what's coming, well, the old saying is still true. Forewarned is forearmed.